Thanks for listening to the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday, 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
What up, Doug Gottlieb Show? Fox Sports Radio. Coming to you from the red-hot city of Angels, home of Hard Knocks, which, shockingly, nobody's actually watching. All right, let's get to this story. There's actually two stories combined in one story in that George Kittle has a new deal, biggest deal ever for tight ends in the National Football League, 5 years, $75 million. Excuse me. Kittle received $40 million guaranteed for injury, $30 million guaranteed at signing. The $40 million guarantee is more than twice that of any other tight end when that deal was, in fact, signed. The Chiefs are closing in on signing tight end Travis Kelce to a long-term extension. At least 5 years, that keeps him in a Kansas City uniform catching passes from Pat Mahomes for the foreseeable future. I believe it's actually been reported as a six-year deal now. So, Pat Mahomes has his guy and Jimmy Garoppolo. Jimmy Garoppolo is actually the quarterback, has his guy. Kelce's deal. So Kelce's deal is 4 years, $57.25 million. As opposed to the 5 year, $75 million deal. Kelce gets, had 2 years remaining on the $46 million deal he signed with the Chiefs in 2016. So it's five plus two, four plus two, you do the math. There, in fact, the 6 years. Look, they're both going to make a lot of money in the $15 million a year range. And this brings them on par with not the very top level wide receivers, but the second level wide receivers. And what should be pointed out is how underpaid tight ends feel like they've been for a really long time. Now, that doesn't mean everyone was underpaid, right? Like, one of the first fights I can remember in the past 10 years over payment of a tight end was with Jimmy Graham when he was in New Orleans. Remember, he had the franchise tag, and they're like, wait a second, he catches just as many balls as a wide receiver. Why isn't he viewed as a wide receiver, even though he's a tight end? And Jimmy Graham is supposedly a horrific blocker, right? Played basketball, as you know, in college. And he's the opposite of the traditional blocking tight end. And he's not close to being the two-way threat that Rob Gronkowski was best at. And Kittle's probably the best at it now, right? Like, I get people who troll me all the time. I was on Cowherd. We were talking about Gronk. And when I said Kittle's not really a blocker, I probably could have said Kelce's no blocker at all. But the idea is the 10 best blocking tight ends in the National Football League you've never heard of before, right? Because they're not fantasy football guys. Kittle, for how they use him, has really embraced the idea of being able to get onto people and to bully smaller people. But Rob Gronkowski is one of the few star tight ends in the history of the league, especially in the last 20 years, where you could leave him man up on one of the talented defensive ends in the league and not feel like it was just a sieve and that Tom Brady is going to be checking his, you know, looking out his ear hole every time Gronk was man up on a defensive end. He's a great blocker as a tight end, essentially a sixth offensive lineman. But This today makes me think of that Parade magazine that comes out once a year in your Sunday newspaper. And I know you're like, well, I don't get Sunday newspaper anymore. But when you did, you'd open it up and the Sunday newspaper is like big, right? You open it up and it's got the coupons. Anybody cut coupons? I cut coupons. I'm a coupon guy. Coupon guy. Did your mom have a coupon book growing up? Hold on, I have something for that. Oh, here it is. Kraft macaroni and cheese, 15 cents off. But I also have a double coupon. Oh, Mom, double coupons. This is my childhood, right? Go to the grocery store and mom's sitting there. There's a whole line of people. And she's like, wait a second. I have a coupon for that. Anyway. But in the Parade magazine, you get the funny section, right? You get the, and then inside the funny section is all the coupons. And then there's a little magazine that pops out and says Parade across the front. And once a year, it says how much people make. And it'll have pictures of like, I don't know, 40 people? 40 people? And of those 40 people, it'll all have what they make per year. And you'll look at it like, wow, librarian, Sonoma, $70,000. I'm in the wrong line of work. Now, it may not say that they've been a librarian for 30 years and they work for the city, but still, 70 grand with benefits and all you got to do is shh. Seems like a pretty good gig, right? That's where tight ends are. You know, tight ends are when we were kids, and I grew up in a city called Orange, California, okay? And if you want to look at the map of Southern California, if you know where Anaheim is, where Disneyland is, that's in Anaheim. The city directly to the right or to the east of Anaheim is the city of Orange. Pretty big city. It's got the Orange Circle, which is famous for the Orange Circle Street Fair every Labor Day. I don't know if that's been canceled yet, but probably will be. Good way place to pick up a beer and a brat. Chapman University is there. The Orange Circle is where that thing you do was filmed when it's supposed to be in Erie, Pennsylvania. Right? It's like a throwback. That's actually the Orange Circle. So that's what my home city is actually known for. But what borders Orange, there's these big hills, unincorporated Santa Ana, North Tustin, these massive houses that overlook all of Orange County. There's a restaurant up there. And I'll never forget, like, you're a kid and you're playing on the playground at Jordan Elementary and you're looking out at the hill and you're looking at these gigantic houses, right? And to me at the time, like, I'd never been to Beverly Hills. I didn't go down to Laguna Hills. I didn't go down to where the beach and all the huge money was. I just thought those are the richest human beings on the face of the earth. The president must live up there, right? But in reality, when we were kids, that's where doctors lived and that's where lawyers lived. Right? That's who made the money. Now, I mean, the most expensive place in the country to live in San Francisco. Why? Because of all the tech money. And if you've ever been in a really nice neighborhood in a really nice city, it'll always be somebody who owned a business and then sold it. Owned something that developed in tech and then sold it. Or they do something in finance. Yeah, he's a fund manager. He's got his own fund. Those are the gigantic houses now. That's what's happened in the NFL. That's what's happened. Look, there's still doctors and plastic surgeons and the best of the best of the best. They still live really, really good lives. But it takes a long time to become a doctor. You carry a lot of debt. You have to carry a lot of insurance. There's a lot that goes into it. And not every doctor lives some glamorous life up on a hillside in the city of Orange, right? In the National Football League, you know, it used to be quarterback and running back. Running back was the guy. Running back is the doctor of the 80s. They used to make all the cash. They used to make all the loot. And now it's, I mean, look, quarterbacks still make a killing. A killing. And, you know, quarterbacks are kind of like banks, you know, where they're in the financial sector. They're just always, they're too big to fail. They're always going to make a ton of money. It feels like that's where quarterbacks are. And all the new money, the tech money, is in these hybrid players. Running backs that can catch it, run it, and block, right? I mean, that's Christian McCaffrey. And tight ends that can block some and that can catch, and they're too big for the defensive backs and they're too fast for the linebackers. And if you can become a guy who can do both, you can live up on that hill. And today is one of the first days I can recall where suddenly tight ends are starting to be recognized among the league's elite wide receivers based upon what they make. Because this blows the Hooper contract in Cleveland, this blows it out of the water. And it should. Kittle's better than Hooper. Is he that much better? I don't know, but he's a lot better. And this feels like the Parade magazine where everybody's like, man, tight ends only make like $9 million a year. That doesn't seem right. And George Kittle's like, yeah, that's going to change. And that just did. And there's also kind of a run on guys. There's some others that have to be re-signed. So we already have two. There'll probably be a run on four or five. And it does feel like tight ends are finally being recognized as being multiple guys and guys that you have to sometimes bracket coverage. Like the saying to me, or the way to look at it is, if you're an offensive player and you occupy more than one defensive player, you're much more valuable than somebody who, you know, you got one guy spying on you, you got one guy looking on you. Quarterbacks, you got all eyes on you. Obviously, that becomes the most valuable. But can you, as a defensive end, can you occupy more than one guy? That's why safeties that can play at the line of scrimmage and that can play all the way back and that can be into coverage, that's why those guys have more value than the true box safety. Sure, you come up and you're a thumper, but can we trust you in coverage, or are you going to look really, really bad? Coming up next, do we really think that spring football will work? Let's discuss that one.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. I saw this. This was really interesting from Jeff Brohm, who's the head coach of Purdue. Remember, he got that huge raise going back a couple years ago when they had a big season and fell off a little bit last year with a ton of injuries. He was offered the job at Louisville, where he had played and he had coached, and he turned it down to stay at Purdue. And so he took the legit time. This is one of my biggest frustrations, is where people shout out ideas and they don't like flush them out, which is, it's okay, right? There's no brainstorming sessions. Like, hey, let's get some ideas out here. Everybody throws out an idea like, hey, what if Gottlieb does a 5-hour radio show? What do you think? Like, oh, okay. That's a lot of hours. After three, you start to get like Francesa. yeah. Right? You just do. And so when people say like, let's play in the spring. Like, okay, well, like flesh out the idea. So he did. So here's his thing. He wants Saturday, January 16th, that would be a long weekend, Martin Luther King weekend, till Friday, January 29th, 2-week training camp build up 6 weeks prior to game one, 16-hour week. He's got the whole, like, because you're not allowed to do 20-hour weeks unless you're in season. He's got the breakdown, 4 days a week, 8 hours of strength and conditioning, 4 hours of walkthrough, 4 hours of meetings and film. It's a build-up week. Build-up 2 weeks. Then 4 weeks of actual training camp, 2 weeks off per week, 2 days off per week, maximum 2 practices and full pads per week. So you're getting in great shape. You're only hitting twice a week. And then Saturday, February 27th through April 17th, an 8-game season, no bye week, 2-week prep before postseason begins, and then you play some sort of postseason. He's got the whole postseason all lined out. And then you're done. Where's the championship? You know, you can have the Rose Bowl, the Big Ten championship, plan A. You got a plan B as well for a 16 playoff. That's May 15th, 2021. So you're done in May. All right. Now, April to July 18th, full discretionary period, up to 3 months off, no mandatory workouts at this time. So in other words, yes, you are playing football later and you're going to come back and play in the fall, and you wouldn't actually start based upon his schedule until October, right? So you'd have plenty of time off, which fights the narrative of, well, you know, you can't have guys play, you know, 2 seasons in 1 calendar year, when the truth is you're still playing into January of the next year. So you're going to have roughly 5 or 6 months off, which is really good. And I think it's interesting. You know, I think it's interesting. He cuts down the number of padded practices. He has that lined out, the number of meetings. He has the hours. There's real thought that goes into it. And then the other part, and this is the argument I've had for people who are in the bubble. So there's lots of guys in the bubble who I talk to. And now, obviously, some of their families have arrived. Some of their friends have arrived. Some others have arrived. And they're like, well, it's going to be better, but it was really hard because it was super boring. And if you have a young family or kids are starting school, you know, unless they're doing virtual learning, you can't have them go in the bubble when, you know, you're working. They had to be in school. And my point to them is the same. Like, look, I get it. It sucks. But you did have 3 months at home with nothing else to do. So you got to be a better parent for 3 months than you ever possibly could have. You usually travel all around. This is excessive amounts of travel in terms of being gone, but it does kind of balance out, right? That's the same argument you make for college football. Is this a lot of football in a fairly short period of time? Yes, but you're actually having less hitting practices, more conditioning, and many of these guys, if you're in college, like, look, if you were a college freshman last year, you had no spring football this year. You have no, in this particular case, for the Big Ten, you'd have no fall football this year. So you're going a full calendar year without hitting anybody, without being hit. And if you're managing how much contact you're taking, there's a pretty good chance, based upon Jeff Brohm's setup, that you're not taking nearly the same amount of physical contact that you did previously. So it kind of could even out. I think some sort of plan like this will in fact work. I think it will. It's one of the big things that's going to have to happen for college football to work, for all this stuff to work. And by the way, all this stuff runs in at the exact same time of college basketball. And that's where it gets really, really tricky, because the NCAA doesn't have oversight into college football, but they do have oversight into college athletics. And the one place that they raise money every year and make money every year is college basketball in the NCAA tournament. And though college basketball programs don't bring in nearly the same revenue as college football teams do, the schools do get a bunch of revenue from the NCAA tournament and from the TV entities. And I don't know how that would be affected. So I like the idea in theory. In practice, basketball makes it really, really tricky. Really tricky. My guess is he's sitting here saying that you have training camp up until February 26th. You're getting in a lot of basketball then. And then the games start February 27th to April 17th. I guess you're going to play the basketball season then. And I guess the question becomes, how many stars opt out for the NFL draft? And what kind of team do you have left? And how do you navigate that with your scholarships? I think that the answer would be this, that, you know, you may end up granting more eligibility to guys who play in the spring season, you know, a senior who wants to come back, or a way of backfilling, or, you know, the high school seniors who normally graduate early and then go play in college, but they play in the spring. Now, would they be eligible to play in this spring season? If you did that, you could have better numbers and better development and a better depth if you lose your stars. Does that make sense? Am I making sense there? Because, like, take Justin Fields, for example, right? Those type of guys usually play their high school senior season, graduate early. They don't go to prom or do any of that stuff. And then they go right to campus, and then they train and they do spring football, and they don't lose any eligibility. That starts their clock. You know, are those freshmen eligible, because they would be on campus, you know, January 16th when they first start their walkthroughs? Now, does that mean they'll be great players? No. Does that mean they'll be ready to play? Probably not. But it does give you more bodies that are available, especially if you're down your top four or five players because they think they're going to be pros.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Charles Robinson joins us, Yahoo Sports, covering the National Football League. It feels like that profession that's finally getting recognized. Like, man, finally. Like, remember when we were kids, I said this, Charles. Remember when we were kids, doctors and lawyers, those are the ones that own the big houses, right? And that's like running backs. Whereas now, all of a sudden, tight ends getting paid in the National Football League. Why did it take so long?
Because the position had to change. You know, I think I remember there was a time when you and I watched tight ends, and the version of tight ends that we watched for a long time, these were guys that, you know, were going to catch 50 passes. They're going to put up 600 yards, and there's, you know, a 4-touchdown season, and that was going to be potentially a Pro Bowl level tight end if he could block, you know. And this isn't, you know, Vasanthi Shenko. These are guys that, frankly, they're closer to wideouts, you know, in terms of the passing scheme now than ever before. And if they can be those guys who can be massive mismatches, but then they're physical, they can block, they especially love to run block. If they're just special players, they're going to get special money. And I think Gronk was probably, you know, Antonio Gates, Gronk, you know, there have been a couple of guys that have come down the pipeline where you're like, you know, Tony Gonzalez, you're like, that is a Hall of Fame caliber tight end. Now we're starting to see some of those guys come through the pipeline. And I think Kelce and George Kittle both fall in that mold.
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. That's the voice of Charles Robinson, senior NFL reporter for Yahoo Sports. Follow him on Twitter at Charles Robinson, or check out his Yahoo Sports NFL podcast. You know, I'm watching Hard Knocks, and obviously there's not a lot of buzz to it. But I do think that because there are so many limitations in place with how much these guys have been able to get together, how much work has been able to be done, it does, if I use that on the macro, it feels like the teams that have the most remaining from last year are going to be the most successful, i.e. the Kansas City Chiefs and the 49ers. It feels like a year in which teams that stayed the same will stay the same in terms of the standings.
Well, veterans, I mean, there's something to be said about an off season in which teams don't get a hold of guys. You know, you don't get them in for the OTAs. You don't get them in for the mini camps. They're not in lifting, you know, all these different things. And even from a, you know, a schematic standpoint, you know, even the classroom work, I know guys are doing it over Zoom and all this stuff, but I don't think it's the same, you know, because look, guys can be competitive in meeting rooms. You know, one of my favorite stories ever told was when, you know, Jacoby Brissett was a backup to Tom Brady, and he got asked a question in a meeting, and he didn't answer it fast enough. Like, he literally paused, and Tom Brady just answered it, like ran over him in a meeting room. And basically Tom Brady's message to him was, yo, get the let out, be on it, either answer it or don't. Like, if you can't answer it, I'm going to answer it for you. I don't care if the question's to you. And, you know, players lose some of that over Zoom meetings. You know, you're not, you know, some guys are very competitive in the classroom. Drew Brees is historically, like, they drafted Garrett Grayson to replace Drew Brees, and Drew Brees ruined him in the classroom because he was like, look, I'm going to be competitive in here, and if you don't keep up, oh well. And, you know, so I think some of that's lost, and I do believe that teams with veteran rosters, guys who have been there before, gone through the monotony of certain parts of preparing, are going to be a lot easier to deal with. And it's why, frankly, I'm not surprised that the Seattle Seahawks, you run into an undrafted rookie, is the guy who's trying to sneak a woman, you know, into the hotel in Seahawks gear. I mean, it's a ridiculous story, but that doesn't surprise me.
It's an all. Let's take a little second, though. It's an all-timer. Right
now, look at your eyes. A good story.
It's an all, like in terms of this. Like, this is like a who was it who had the Wizinator? I'm trying to remember who was it has the Wizinator.
The running back for the Vikings. Oh man, I can't believe I'm not going to remember this. We'll get back to it.
We'll get back to it. So for people,
Wizinator though was up there,
right? Wizinator was down there, but up there. Yes, Kima Siverin, who played at A&M and at Oklahoma State. He tried to sneak a girl in. It was Ontario Smith. There you go. Ontario Smith is
Ontario Smith. That
there you
was
go. All time.
It's always good to have a producer in your ear.
Yes.
when you run into a wall.
Yes, and the internet. And the internet. The internet works really well.
As well.
So he tries to sneak her in, and she dresses with Seahawks gear in an effort to be thought of as a Seahawk player. Which, I mean, I would hope she doesn't look like a Seahawk player. I guess. That's actually the good takeaway from it, is she was attractive enough to not be, you know, misconstrued with Sam Gash, right? Like, she didn't look like a dude. She didn't have traps popping out of her ears like some of these NFL dudes.
Yeah, she didn't have guns. You know, she's not walking in with the, you know, the Aaron Donald guns. But yeah, look, it's definitely an all-timer, but I'm also like, yeah, this doesn't blow my mind in terms of knowing, you know, this is a young, I'm sorry, but young guys, not that veterans don't make stupid mistakes, but I think this is one of those seasons, knowing what a lot of those NFLPA calls were like, you know, knowing, you know, who got involved in this process and, you know, being concerned, in a way it mirrored, weirdly enough, I think it mirrored society. Like when I would talk to people, you know, with the union, they would say like, yeah, you know, you don't hear a lot of concern from the 22, 23, 24 year olds. Like most labor situations, you don't hear a lot of concern from the 22, 23, 24 year olds, but it's the guys that are in their 30s who know how hard it was to stick in this league, who know that, hey, grinding out 5, 6, 7 years in a pension and, you know, providing for your family while playing football as long as you possibly can, those tend to be the guys that don't make a mistake this stupid this early. Now, that's not to say that a vet won't do it in November. You know, that's not to say there won't be a Clevenger situation or, you know, a Miami Marlins situation where people just start to do stupid stuff out of the sheer boredom of what this is going to be like. But, I mean, come on, man. We are, like, right on the doorstep. We just got here. We just got here. You know, they're not even pads yet. There's no contact. Like, and for this to happen now is just absolutely, you know, it's foolish. But you have a lot of teams around the league that their hotel situations are set up.
Yeah.
And the rookies are in the hotel. So, like, the Los Angeles Chargers is a good example. I was talking to somebody with the Chargers, and he said, yeah, man, you know, we do have a hotel set up. And he said, that's where the rookies are. And he said, and there are rooms available for the veterans if they want them. And they're like, but, you know, that's where we're putting our rookies. And I sat there and I thought, man, if there's going to be something dumb that happens, it's probably going to be with the rookies in the hotels because they're not completely cordoned off. And, you know, those are the guys that are probably going to be least responsible up front, even though that, you know, some of them clearly need jobs and, you know, are cuttable. But it's, yeah, this is just, I'll tell you what, it is another one of these moments, though, and Major League Baseball has provided most up to this point, but it's another one of those moments that other teams are going to seize upon, and I'm telling you, I guarantee the next couple of days, and I wouldn't even be surprised if we saw it on Hard Knocks. I guarantee you're going to see coaches or personnel, you know, GMs who are saying to players, hey, look at what just happened. Like, right. Absorb that.
Sure. Yeah,
because that's real. And that's going to happen here if this happens.
Yep. Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Charles Robinson joining us. That said, it felt like a lot of quick opt-outs before the guys really knew what the protocols looked like. I know that was how the deal worked. You know, what I saw in Hard Knocks was like, yeah, I mean, they got like legit protocols. It feels like they'll be prepared. I do understand, you know, that this heart condition is a real possibility if you contract COVID, and that's the big fear. My thing is, I actually think you're just as likely, if not more likely, to contract COVID at home as you are in a facility or playing football. The only difference is you're being tested daily in the National Football League. That said, like, how badly hurt was Kansas City? Damian Williams, obviously, they replaced in the draft, but he might have been their best player for most of the Super Bowl, and then you lose a really talented offensive lineman. I know that New England was badly hurt, but it feels like Kansas City was as well.
Yeah, Kansas City, you lose a veteran offensive lineman, you lose a rookie offensive lineman, so that's depth right there. I mean, so you're seeing depth loss. You know, you talk about losing a running back who is a veteran, multi-talented. Now, granted, you did take a running back in the first round and who's, you know, going to be extremely talented in Clyde Edwards-Helaire, but the problem is with rookie running backs, those are typically, unless they're really special guys, those are people who teams don't trust until you're halfway through a season,
right?
Because they have to prove that they can protect a quarterback. And, you know, so yeah, from a depth standpoint, it definitely isn't great, but Kansas City is just, I mean, they're loaded. It's ridiculous. Like, you look at the roster and you just sit there and you go, they kept everybody. They didn't lose Chris Jones. They extended him. You know, they extended the quarterback, they extended the tight end, they extended all these special players, and they didn't suffer yet. And I think next year's really, we're going to see this moving forward. They didn't suffer the gutting that happens to a lot of Super Bowl teams where all of a sudden in free agency, a lot of like mid-tier guys seem very attractive because they're coming off of Super Bowl teams. I think that's still a year away for Kansas City. But to me, yeah, I think even though they lost a little bit, I just don't see how Kansas City didn't walk out of this offseason going, man, it's here for us. Like we could very easily repeat as champions this year. You know, we've got all these pieces, and that offense is just, it's absurd. And this may actually be one of the few years where off the bat, offenses should be way ahead of, you know, usually it's the opposite. Defenses are way ahead. But I think if you have a veteran offensive group, knows the scheme, knows, and you have a quarterback who has a cannon like, you know, Patrick Mahomes, and who can be creative, which is where the league is with quarterbacks, defenses are going to have a hell of a time with Kansas City already. And I think this is going to be one of those seasons where not having the hitting, not having all that continuity in the offseason is going to hurt the defenses that face them right away. I would not. The AFC West is good luck. Next 10 years, you're going to be drafting to deal with Pat Mahomes for 10 years.
But last thing, Charles Robinson joining us, Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Charles, a senior NFL reporter for Yahoo Sports, has a great podcast, Yahoo Sports NFL Podcast. You do talk to lots of people in the league. What's their level of confidence that this thing will go off on time?
I think it's better. I really do. I think it's improved because I think the fear was when the COVID testing began and guys started getting to facilities, the fear was that, you know, there could be a huge spate of positives that they just don't know are there. And, or that there would be some asteroids, like just like maybe some big time quarterbacks would have it, or in the opt-outs, there would be some, you know, just mind blowing opt-outs. Now, you know, there were some good players that opted out. There's no doubt. But I mean, like, you know, people are like, whoa, CJ Mosley opted out. I'm like, all right, well, CJ Mosley wasn't really on the field for the Jets last year. I mean, Cam Hayward's a guy who could have opted out, you know, for the Pittsburgh Steelers, didn't. Von Miller's a guy who could have opted out for the Broncos. So like even some of these guys I think were sort of expected stars who could have opted out, didn't. I think teams were optimistic that it wasn't this huge run of super above board guys. The Patriots were surprising with the number, but, and then beyond that, the testing, the overall testing, even the union's like, hey, it's well below 1% for everybody. Like you throw everybody in it and that matters. You got to have the cauldron of personnel, people, support staff, everybody there for it to be well below 1%. And you're just starting here. And it hasn't really gone in the opposite direction, you know, in the early going. I think people feel a lot better about it. And now let me put it this way. Right now, teams are struggling with like, hey, if we're going to have fans, how do we figure that out?
Right.
It's less of an operational, you know, football standpoint. We'll shift a little more toward that when they hit each other and they start hitting each other, you know, the third week of August, you know, so we're about 12 more days from that. We'll see then if the dynamic changes a little bit. So
I said it was
still good.
Yeah, I said it was last one. I lied. I got one more. Joe Montana told USA Today that Tom Brady said they listened to him and then didn't take any of his suggestions. How much of that is because we always operated under the premise that him and McDaniels were boys, were close, you know, and that McDaniels and his relationship was like brothers. I was a little bit surprised. I'm not surprised in terms of it's based upon personnel, but in terms of what they did and how they did it, that's kind of surprising to me.
Yeah, and I actually think it's a little bit of both. Like, you know, I'll give you an example. Like he was upset about Antonio Brown. Like he really was upset that they, you know, just washed their hands of Antonio Brown, particularly because Tom was such a big part of getting him in there, getting him on the right page, accepting him. Like, I mean, Brady brought him into his home, like all these different things. Right. And then, you know, the Patriots pulled the plug. And frankly, you know, Tom's pretty cutthroat. And I think part of his thought process was, you just took away a guy who could have been the difference for us. Like, you know, and then he sat there and you saw they struggled offensively. I think that was part of it. I would like Joe to be a little more specific. You know, let me put it this way. You've heard a lot of stories over the years over what was frustrating Brady, and it's been a myriad of different things. And I think those things are all going to bleed out over the years. And maybe someday there's a, you know, the big Last Dance documentary or the Lance document, whatever it is. And obviously it's coming because Tom's cut that deal. And I think some of that stuff maybe eventually might get out. It's going to be incumbent upon Tom though to actually say, like, here are a couple of things that really piss me off, and I'll say this about what Montana said. Don't think that there weren't some legitimate frustrations on Tom's part in terms of he always felt like he deserved a bigger seat at the table in terms of the decision making and or at least the input and feeling like he was heard. Not uncommon with quarterbacks. I mean, there's many of these. Aaron Rodgers, another guy. I want to be heard.
They want to be look, it's actually a lot like Aaron. I want to be heard. And oh yeah, by the way, don't be drafting somebody to replace me, right? Like, I mean, I was told Peyton Manning, who's like the best, but every time somebody was drafted in Indianapolis, he'd call the GM, be like, "Who is this guy? Like, why are we taking the why?" You know, it could be seventh round. It didn't matter. They all are kind of wired the same. Charles, we got to run. Great stuff. Can't wait to hear the next pod. Yahoo Sports NFL podcast. Charles Robinson. Follow him on Twitter as well. Thanks so much, Charles.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Doug. Stay
Unfortunate safe. News for one championship contender in the NBA. We'll share it with you next.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Dan Beyer, what do you got?
Doug, news just in from NCAA President Mark Emmert.
We cannot now, at this point, have fall NCAA championships.
Now, that doesn't mean FBS football won't be going on, but Emmert basically saying there won't be any fall championships because they don't have enough programs, or at least 50% of those programs competing in those fall sports actually competing. Emmert says that they are turning toward the winter and spring to try and hold championships for fall sports. However, said that winter and spring sport competitions will be given top priority in trying to compete since they already had their season canceled last spring. That just coming down from Mark Emmert.
Okay.
Fascinating stuff. So Mark Emmert says, look, dude, we ain't got the teams. It is happening everywhere. It's going to be interesting. What's I think most interesting is, do you see this story where Big Ten schools are having intramurals? they don't have sports, but they got intramurals. Anyway, I'd love to see some of these football players show up and be like, you guys got a flag football game?
Okay.
Justin Fields is out there just diming dudes up.
Right.
I got some bad news for the Spurs fans. They needed either Memphis or Phoenix, two of the three, or Portland to lose two of those three. Phoenix right now taking it to Dallas, 99-74, 3 minutes left in the third. Grizzlies beating Milwaukee as they're about to wrap up the third quarter, 92-74. Now, if these scores hold, Phoenix would need Portland to lose tonight to the Nets to get into that 8-9 playoff. Memphis, with a victory, would lock up their spot in that 8-9 show.
So Memphis wins and Phoenix is out even though they're undefeated in the bubble?
If Portland wins tonight, yes.
And Portland plays who?
The Nets.
Which is really a wild card, right? Because the Nets have been playing hard for no apparent reason.
Yes. It's absurd that
with nobody, right? Like their best players aren't playing, and yet the Nets are still playing and playing pretty well.
Yep.
And U.S. Open won't have Rafael Nadal and Roger Federer. We knew that. But Novak Djokovic will play. Remember, he tested positive for COVID-19 in June, but he says he will compete when the Grand Slam event starts August 31st in Queens.
I mean, imagine if he wins. It's like, okay, he won, but the other two, you know, greats aren't playing.
Yeah. They'll just leave the trophy on the court for him to get by himself.
That would be weird, right?
Hey, get out there and press.
That was the press.
All right, check out my all-new all-ball podcast. Pete Lisicki is my guest. He's a great player at Penn State, had an awesome overseas career. Now he manages people's money. That's where, because, you know, doctors, lawyers, it's not where it's at. It's raising people's money. Tight ends got paid, and rightfully so. It's an evolving, changing of the times. And we'll see who else gets paid. And if sports continue on. Stay safe out there.